thank you, members Huerta. Well, we have noted the apology of the chair that she is off sick. I welcome you. As you know, two important things have happened. The first one is elections, and a new thing started happening at local government level, coalitions, because the majority party has got a reduced majority. Municipalities in several municipalities in the country. The second one is the welcoming of the SAT. As you know, they arrived this morning. For the past 15 days, there have been elections and Olympic Games. So they arrived this morning. As committed by SASCOC, they got 10 medals. The third area is the fact that August is Women's Month. So those are the three key important things that we need under. So today, the main business is the meeting with Hoki. We've been reading about Hoki, so today we've got the opportunity as the new portfolio committee to welcome you and get everything from ourselves on your plans vis-à-vis the 10 years, the developmental programs that you have, governance and transformation plans, and the financial performance of your federation. So we welcome you. With us is Mr. Mike Duplessis, S.A. Agi, O.P. President, Ms. Lwadi Besimelani, S.A. Oki, Vice President, Mr. Wendell Domingo, S.A. School Hockey President, Mr. Jerry Doli, S.A. Hockey Project Manager, and Mrs. Marisa Langeni. So that is the team that we are with today. I also welcome all other people that have joined us today, and members. I know that members have been busy campaigning, and then others are here at the board, others are said, others are collaborating, even informal manner with other parties. So it's exciting times. Okay. So with that, are we happy with the agenda? As we have it. After voting, it will be deliberations on committee report on the performance, and then consideration of committee minutes, and then we'll have a view of the committee program. Honorable Mahan.
Thank you, Chairperson. Before we go to the agenda, Chairperson, I request you as a Chairperson to give the members to introduce themselves to the visitors or just
It's fine, you can still do that, but I'd introduce them. So we'll give to the President.
Thank you very much for inviting us today. My name is Mark Odusi, and I'm President of SRP. And so you will do. And then on my left is Marissa Lingini. She is our CEO. On my right is Wandile Shimalani. She is our Vice President and heads up our corporate governance. And then next to that is Gary Dolly. He heads up our projects division. And then after that is Wendell Dominga. And Wendell is our president for SA Hockey. SA Hockey School, sorry.
Okay.
Good morning. My name is John Hendricks. I'm an independent. I belong to Central Hockey as well as Western Province Hockey Union.
Okay. And the other person, all protocols observed, so that we didn't exclude anybody. Okay. Can you lead us, sir, the president?
Thank you. Briefly on the hockey, the plan to utilize our one-stop allocation. Marissa is going to chat to us about the money. Promise, I say.
If I may, could we follow through the presentation that we have submitted, because we've covered all the elements of the agenda items in the presentation. So if it goes through, I know that the...
is this thing not working?
It's not on as yet.
Okay, so members, do you have the presentation? We can follow the presentation, it's fine. But you still have to lead us, eh? Is this the one?
The one called South African Hockey Association Commentary. But I believe the comment section will be on the screen.
Challenge for hockey at the moment is to grow the game in previously disadvantaged communities and in certain sectors where hockey doesn't have a very strong following. In terms of our strategy, we want to in fact introduce hockey as part of the life skills curriculum in grade R and the foundation phase, as part of fundamental movement skills, within the normal school day. So we believe if we can do that, we can expose in fact more kids, age group 6 and under and 8 and under, to a new, let's call it, ball skills type of activity. By doing that, it will give us a footprint in the schools and also expose kids to something new. So what we want to try to do is also after this to promote in fact inter-class competitions at the primary school level and within the grade R. And then the strategy that we want to employ in terms of aligning some of the schools with hubs around a particular facility or any level facility where hockey can be played. Now, what we have done, in fact, we have prepared, it's called modified hockey, this is the presentation that talks to the implementation strategy. So, if you have a look at the modified program, it is totally aligned, in fact, it's aligned with the life skills grade R 1 and 2, and it's referred to as hockey skills development program. It is an 8-week program that we believe can be rolled out as part of physical education stroke high skills in the foundation phase, grade R 1, 2, and 3. 8-week program that is very, very cost effective. We do not require a lot of equipment to be able to run this particular program within any institution or any school. So this is what we would like to do. As I said, it is aligned with the life skills program. For argument's sake, in the first term, the key thing within life skills, which they are 1, 2, and 3, is movement. So we would like to introduce the, let's call it the movement skill, fundamental movement skill, as part of our strategy to have a footprint in more schools. And ultimately, hopefully, if we can start this, you know, we have already, in fact, identified certain areas as part of our strategy. We would like to, in fact, also make the equipment available to at least, in phase one, 100 new schools. And I think my colleagues will talk about when we come to the youth sector, to target another few schools in terms also 100 in that regard. And ultimately, if we do develop a footprint that the schools that we are targeting, those schools will form partnerships with clubs within those communities and start with junior under-8 hockey within those communities. The reason why we believe that this will work, number one, is based on fun. In fact, it's fundamental, so it is movement, but the key emphasis is on fun within the school curriculum. It is exceptionally cost-effective. Unfortunately, in fact, I forgot the ball. We've got a bigger size ball, plastic, that we are going to, in fact, roll out, very cost-effective. We also want to introduce a plastic kit that we would like to, in fact, roll out to some of these schools as part of fundamental movement skills within these communities. We also believe that there's a lot of learning opportunities, specifically in this particular phase, the fundamental phase, that can be played, in fact, on any level surface. So that is not, in fact, an inhibiting factor. We want to grow the game. The team sizes are very small. If we grow progress, in fact, team sizes is 5 versus 5. And my colleague will also talk about the new innovation that we'll introduce at youth level. And if we do play any games, you'll notice that the duration of the game is only 3 minutes. It fits into the curriculum during the day because, while I think it's 90 minutes allocated in grade R and the foundation phase for high schools per week. So we believe that this can be part of the mainstream in terms of life skills, and it includes both genders as well. So that is our strategy in terms of getting a footprint within the primary school sector as a modified stroke fundamental group of skills within the system. Thank you.
Morning everyone, I'm Wendell Lingo. I head up the National School Structure I'm just going to elaborate on what my colleague started on. South African Hockey Association, in partnership with Sport and Rec, and as well as our provincial ECAS, launched the development of the modified game. Modified Hockey Fives is basically hockey's version of the T20 in cricket and the rugby sevens, etc., where fewer players are on the field, and it also allows, especially in areas where there are not enough participants, an opportunity to participate. We've strategically and deliberately developed this in or launched in areas where hockey has not been played before, in our disadvantaged schools, and we've identified a minimum of 8 schools around a particular facility. We've launched this in 3 of our areas already, which is the Western Cape, the Eastern Cape, which includes the Port Elizabeth and the Amatola region, as well as in Gauteng province, which included the Westbury area in the Johannesburg. Very successful launches were conducted there. Our phases, we had 3 phases in which we did this program. First phase was we met the headmasters of the schools with 2 of the educators who indicated they would like to be involved in our program. And our second phase was we provided the resources. The resources included equipment. Each school received 20 sets of equipment, which included a ball for each player, a stick for each player, gum guard, gym pads, etc. It was a set, which would then go to 10 girls at the school and 10 boys at the school. The educators were also trained and coached in this modified program, as well as given coaching on how to control the game, which is the umpiring part of it. And our third phase was we as South African Hockey drew up a program for them, because the idea was that they play in competition amongst themselves, a league, and this is happening quite successfully in the areas where we are. This is the third week that they are playing a competition, an inter-school competition on a facility. All facilities provided are, we've arranged with the federations or the owners of the facilities to give the facility free to free of charge to the school, so there's absolutely no cost. What makes this exciting is that the schools are all within walking distance, a maximum of possibly 5 kilometers, and an educator could then just transport 5 or 6 learners in a car down to the field during the school time between 1 or 2 and get those learners back to the school in time for them either to be dismissed or to be transported home. The big challenge for us when we met the headmasters of school was there's a huge migration of learners from various areas attending schools in the suburbs. And the result was that those learners, especially transported to the school, were not given an opportunity to participate in sport because their transport or their taxi is waiting for them to take them back to the areas where they come from. We then structured the program in such a way that, as Gary says, it fits in with the curriculum of the school life orientation. So movement skills are all sport that is part of the life orientation program will then form part of this at least twice a week. One session will be held at the school where the children will be practicing, and the second session of that week will be held as an inter-school competition. The modified program, as you said earlier, is aligned with what the International Hockey Federation is busy implementing. The last youth competition, Youth Olympics, had the format of modifieds as a competition, and it is assumed that the next Olympics would also have this exciting format of fewer players on the field. So hopefully with what we've launched, would prepare the next generation of our national players to participate in the Olympics going forward. Our full field competition will still continue with the schools, and it is our hope that as the interest grows in the occupiers in particular areas, that the school would also eventually enter, in whichever court they do decide, into the full field leagues of the particular province. And that would get them to the main city. Just to touch on the competitions that we've had for this year, there is a huge increase in interest of hockey within all our schools in the country. And you can see it. Hopefully within the next couple of years, the majority of the schools, especially in schools that has not been paid before, will be participating in our provincial team and in our school leagues. Thank you.
In terms of strategic direction one, we also want to talk about growing the game at all levels. And we've assisted with our members and our provinces in terms of providing club assistance and support. We've noted that there's been a great struggle to maintain clubs currently that are operating in the country. There's a demand to obviously grow clubs and to open new clubs, but there's even a bigger demand to make sure that the existing clubs remain in existence and are able to service the areas that they service. So in terms of the systems that we provide, we conduct club development workshops using the club development resource pack that we have defined and developed, which is available to all of our clubs. We develop an incentive scheme for clubs that have a partnership with their local schools. We've also managed to educate our members to say that at the end of the day, if you do not have relationships within the community that you function, you will not be able to survive as a club. So you can't just be a club with people leaving work and coming to play and not looking after the schools in the area, or even if you have a tertiary facility in the area that you operate in. So we are obviously promoting partnerships with local schools to make sure that the local schools become a feeder into the club once those children leave their schools. We're also saying we're developing a system of categorization of clubs to establish the type of support required. Now, not every single club meets all of our requirements. For example, in some areas, we might only have a club that caters for age group 2, which is largely school children. In some areas, you might only have a club which looks at masters. Some areas, you might only have a club that looks after university students. So we categorize those clubs. We obviously promote a club that has all the sectors involved. So we pay to a club. If you want to be a recognized club, you need to have a mini hockey section which basically talks to the grade or the primary school level. You need to have a school ticket as part of your youth section in your club. We'd like to obviously have seniors who would then play at Premier League division or even first division, and then we'd obviously like to promote clubs having a master section and a grandmaster section. But at times clubs do not fit all of those requirements and might only really have one sector, for example, just maybe a mini hockey section. So we try and categorize the clubs that we ourselves as the National Federation also understand the members that they're dealing with. There's obviously qualification criteria. We give preference to previously disadvantaged clubs in terms of the financial support that we provide, especially Black African clubs. Clubs with a junior section, because as we said, that is a big push in terms of our growth strategy at South African hockey. So clubs with a junior section, we would give additional support to. Clubs with a formal partnership with a primary school. Big drive on our part to say, primary school is where we need to start. We can no longer start hockey and fundamental hockey skills at a high school level. We've got to start within the primary schools and make sure that at primary school level, children already are being exposed to the movement skills that are required to play a sport like hockey. In fact, not only a sport like hockey, it's a sport where a ball is used, so all hand-eye coordination, fundamental movement skills are promoted at primary school level. So we're having a very big focus in terms of promoting movement skills and activities at primary school, and not only waiting for children when they get to play. The application criteria that currently says so the clubs concerned would need to give us a club profile, so we make sure that they themselves are involved in their own data collection, that they themselves know exactly who their members are. We want to make sure that every club obviously has a constitution, that they have a database of their members, and they have good governance practices as well as financial management. And for us it's quite simple. Why you're off the club? We want better structured clubs. We don't want a club that just rocks up on a Saturday to play a game. We want clubs that have structure. We want clubs that have a defining purpose in terms of how they want to promote the game of hockey within their own community. We want to give clubs opportunities to communities to participate in sports. Some communities might not have sports in certain schools, but they might have access to a club in a community. We want to develop community spirit. We want to promote clubs actually playing leagues in their own communities and not having to travel long distances to pick up a league game. We want to make the game more affordable to our youth and encourage more young people to play hockey. Hockey is not a very cheap sport, so we are finding often we are getting lots of requests in terms of support for equipment, in terms of support for travel or paying coaches, and we're giving that support where we can. We want to promote junior and youth within a club structure. The club becomes more sustainable that way. They cannot function solely on the working members or the senior members within the club. They've got to have a feeder scheme that will obviously then convert school-going children into club members one day. And I think it's not something that's peculiar to hockey only. If you look and if I chat to colleagues in the sector, we find that there's a huge drop-off rate between school, university and club. And we are saying you've got to start that relationship quite early. You can't wait until someone is 16, 17 to find out what their future plans are. You've got to make sure that you create a home for them within their country. The measurable outcomes for us obviously will be the number of clubs complying with the governance criteria, because it's a huge, huge area for us, and the number of clubs with junior youth sectors. Once you have a club that says we now have 8 teams, 10 teams, and we're able to field an under-13 squad, an under-17, under-18, under-21, then for us that will be a direct measurable to see how successful the club strategy has been.
Thank you very much, Marissa. In terms of the strategic directive number 4, the capacity building program, also aligned with the scorecard, the transformation scorecard in terms of capacity building. So what we have developed, in fact, at African Hockey, in terms of the 4 sectors that we've identified, coaching, currently we have developed a level 0, level 1, level 3, and also a goalkeeper's manual in terms of our accreditation system. So, which is aligned with SASCOT's, education and training framework. What we have done there with the entry level, our level 0 and our level 1, the material is freely available. We put that onto our website. So anybody, in fact, any educator or any hockey person throughout the country will be able to download or have access to the coaching material at low cost. Secondly, in terms of the technical officiating, we've also developed a lot of material, and that material is also freely available to all of our members, including the schools. The umpiring, next summer there, we've developed back a system of accreditation in terms of level 0, level 1, that talks to the coaching framework. I think Marissa has spoken about the administration resource pack. We've developed a resource pack for all of the clubs, how to develop constitutions, a number of templates that they can use in terms of job descriptions, so that is also free and available to all our members. And lastly, we have developed a lovely license program targeting, in fact, the youth as part of our service to our clubs. I think the important thing is, I think Mangilia will deal with this in terms of the memorandum of agreement. We have developed a memorandum of agreement where all of these coaching courses, umpiring courses, administration courses are clearly outlined in terms of our members. Our members are required to conduct at least 3 courses per year, and they are measured against that. But I think the one here will deal with that. We have, in fact, a database of all the coaches, technical officials, as well as administrators that we have trained. And for 2017, quite clearly, we have a program that we will roll out in accordance with the memorandum of agreement from our members.
Thanks, Derek. Good morning. I'll just direct you to the head of that evidence from the cafe. Right, as we've already stated, a lot of our governance has been structured around the transformation charter for this year. So we have developed a memorandum of agreement with our members. Constitutionally, our members are constituted by provinces, as well as affiliates such as universities, schools, country districts, and masters. So this memorandum of agreement, which is attached on page, starting at page 5, it's basically covering the 6 dimensions of the transformation charter, such as corporate governance, skill and capacity development, performance, etc., and our members are expected to then be measured based on their compliance with the dimensions of the transmission charter. So we have been implementing that. We have started that process this year. This year also does mark the year for the amendment of our strategic plan, which we do on a five-year basis. So this would be the fifth year of 2015, and this year is the implementation of the next five-year phase of our strategic plan. So that is why we have then started with the memorandum of agreement to say with members they have to comply to retain a membership in South African hockey or to remain members in good standing. Our progress report on the geopolitical alignment, I think it's been 2 years now where SASCOC is required to move into the 9 political provinces of operation, which was not happening before. Before we were operating, I think, 19 regions as provinces. So you'd have in Gauteng, Southern Gauteng, Northern Gauteng, and Eastern Gauteng operating as separate provinces. So we have actually made a great amount of progress with having one body of hockey operating in each and every province. So there's 9 political offices operating now in terms of the political geographical process. So Gauteng, we have fused the 3 regions into one province, and they have an executive bank account constitution and are properly constituted now in terms of the requirements. So we are in great progress there. I think we have about 2 more provinces that we need to constitute properly in those senses of constituting an executive board, constituting a bank account, as well as having a constitutional document. However, the process has started, and we're working on some of the player requirements around that, because obviously the geographical outline of a place, for example, like the Western Cape, where you had Welland and what we call Southern Cape, which is the Eden district. So in hockey terms it was Southern Cape. Now we are trying to get everybody just operating in a proper geopolitical sense. So we have made a great deal of progress on that. We have had a couple of consultations because we have great respect for the work we need to do as outlined by the ECG, and we've invited Dr. Willibason a couple of times to come and speak to our executives and speak to our coaches and speak to our members to try and get us aligning with the EPG and get us properly on the way with that. And because one of our major goals for the year going forward in our five-year strategic plan is to improve the capture of our annual EPG data. So we've had the assistance from Dr. Vasson in doing that, and we're very committed to ensuring that we can actually improve how we are submitting on our EPG data. We've had in May a regional workshop with our presidents with regards to the presidents of all the provinces and the presidents of our affiliate members with regards to our transformational plans, and we've gone forward with that, and they are in acceptance with our MOA that we have set and with the new plan going forward for the next 5 years. We've adopted our transformation charter. The president has adopted that, the membership has adopted that, and we are in the process of then submitting the regional MOA. So we're on a good track in terms of transformation and getting everything done according to the charter and getting everything done according to the EPG. We do believe it is the moral right thing to do. We do believe that with governance you create sustainability, and it's a cornerstone of anything that needs to be run effectively. It improves the marketability of our brand as well, because we run things properly, we're hoping sponsors will look upon us favorably. So it also improves our credibility as an organization. And the outcomes in which we wish to measure ourselves is that we have adopted the charter, we have reviewed our strategic plan, we are looking to improve our data capturing, especially of EPG. We have aligned our operations and activities with the scorecard. We will be reviewing the regional MOAs as soon as we adopt them at our SGM in November, I think it's November. It is also an amendment cycle for us, so we'll be looking at all of our policies and our policy frameworks. And we also want to progress on geopolitical alignment. I think the 2 provinces that are left behind, we would want to have that completed by the end of the year.
Thanks. Just to add to what Lwandi has captured in terms of governance, we found that in discussions with a lot of our members in our provinces that sometimes when it comes to providing data and providing information, it's historically been a very knee-jerk reaction.
purely because, okay, SA Hockey now requires the following, SRSA now requires the following, SASCO now requires the following. And we are saying to our members, you need to turn this thing on its head. And that's why we developed the memorandum of understanding to say every item of data that is required, it's because before you supply the data, there's supposed to be an action to the data. So you can't just say we're going to have six umpires' courses. We need to be able to say, what do we have last year? What is our target for the next year? And start building targets, a culture of targets in terms of what the organization wants to achieve. Yes, nationally we can set a pace in terms of what we would like to see, but at ground level, provinces need to take the lead in terms of what they actually want to achieve within their own specific area. So that's been a big focus for us. I think the memorandum of understanding makes it a lot easier for them to condense all the requirements of the EPG. And it simply does not become a whole philosophy of we're supplying information because it's required. The information must lead to a target and must lead to action. So that's been a very useful exercise for ourselves. This is the first round of this particular memorandum of understanding or agreement rather. So it'll be quite interesting to see how many of our provinces have basically embraced the philosophy that this is not about capturing data and about numbers looking good. This is actually about action that needs to happen on the ground. With regards to the area of finance, we thought we would take you through the summary of our income statement and where we sit as an organization. Our funding streams are very simple. Obviously, we have funding from the Department, the National Department of Sport and Recreation. That has been sitting comfortably now for the last 3 years at an allocation of two million rands. Obviously, the 2 million rands accompanied with a business plan that we have submitted as an organization, as well as a service level agreement that gets attached to that. Of the 2 million, you'll see further in the notes that a portion is ring-fenced for the development of school sports. There's been a huge drive to ensure that we're engaging in school sport and we're committing to developing sports at school level, and the department has ring-fenced amount of 800,000 purely for school sports. There's an amount ring fenced of 200,000 to assist with administration of all the projects that are aligned. And the balance of 1.2 million is obviously for programs that we've identified as a federation in terms of where the greatest needs are within the hobby community. We've also got funding that comes obviously from affiliation fees. It's been a thorny subject in many of our circles in terms of what is the right pricing of affiliation fees? What is the affordability scale of members? And how many people are actually contributing to coffers of the organization? Currently, we're sitting at just under 8,000 paying members. So when we look at our funding, we're actually operating on affiliation fees paid by just under 8,000 registered members. And those are members that are largely based at clubs and that participate in leagues. Where we have social hockey, or we have, as the universities call it, court-based hockey, or where people are playing once a week on a Wednesday night, they get together and they play hockey, those we are not collecting fees from. We're also not collecting fees from school children. So, and that's where the base is. School children, we all have almost 200,000 school children that are participating in hockey, and we're not collecting any fees from that sector. So our coffers are very small. We're only collecting fees from just under 8,000 people. We also obviously have sponsorship, which largely is aligned to teams. Some sponsors only exclusively want to sponsor the national women team, or exclusively want to sponsor the national men's team, or they want to specifically sponsor a special project within the organization. So that also becomes one of the funding streams. Lottery, we have an existing grant that we're still expensing, and hopefully the next cycle we'll then be able to get new allocations from the National Lottery. So basically, if you look at all of our expenses, a large portion of that income is obviously sitting 27% is coming in from government sector, which obviously includes the funding we get from Lightfoot, Sasquatch, Olympic Solidarity, etc. We've put that under the same category. In terms of sponsorships, we've only got 8% of our income that comes from sponsorship. Player contributions, we're in a situation where both our national teams do not have a headline sponsor. As a result, to commit to events and to commit to tournaments, international tournaments, we're having to ask the players to assist with fundraising. Some of this fundraising is their own personal payments into the tournament budget, and that's already sitting at about 16% of our overall budget. donations sitting at 1%, affiliation fees is 26%, so you can see the big sectors there are obviously government funding as well as our affiliation fees. Levies in terms of courses, books, rule books, etc., we're looking at 2% of our budget. Coaching income, 2% of our budget. Tours and tournaments, 6%. For every tournament we have a tournament levy and tournament fees. So participating teams would basically pay a levy to participate in that event, and we collected those fees in order to cover all costs related to hosting the event, covering technical officials, umpires, etc. So that amount is sitting at 6% of our overall budget. Other income, 3%. This might be ad hoc income that's required or people committing to certain projects. Event income, this is related to any income that we make off hosting an event in South Africa or sponsors are sponsoring towards a specific event. We put that under event income, which is only sitting currently at 9%. So the total income for the previous financial year, we were sitting at 7.5,861,000. In terms of our expenses, 22% of our funding goes towards administration. We have a small office. We're based in Johannesburg. We have 3 full-time staff members, and we basically function, we run the entire organization of 3 full-time staff members. International playing affairs, where we've had to send teams overseas, send teams to tournaments, we spend 39% of our budget on that item. Development and transformations is largely all the funding that we get from SRSA and any other projects. We spend 25% of our budget on that. Coaching, we've got a very small amount. It actually hasn't even created a budget amount at this stage. Rules and technical, which basically relate largely to all of our officials, administrators, technical officials, umpires, etc. We spent 8% of our budget on that. Executive council meetings, we spent 3%. International affiliation fees, we put it at 0% here simply because they've invoiced them in the next financial year. So that will come up in this current financial year, this fee. And I must speak on the international affiliation fees, which have radically been reduced by the International Hockey Federation. So that's come as a benefit to ourselves. Marketing sponsorship costs have been 2%. We've had to pay things like commission on people that have sourced funding for us. We spend 2% on that. Tournaments, we spent over 24,000. Just in terms of depreciation, we sit at 1%. So of our total income, the total expenditure is 7,576,494,000. This thing at a deficit of 72,633, which is a huge improvement from the previous year, which was sitting at 1.8 million. That's in terms of fines. So that's just a very broad picture of the financial situation of South African hockey. If we could move on to the next presentation, which is largely to do with the one-off allocation of 10 million rand. I think we were all very happy when the announcement came from the department that hockey would be the focus federation for 2016, and that basically would come with a capital injection of 10 million, as well as an injection of human capital, whatever resources we need from the department to assist in delivering on projects which have been identified for the 10 million. We have had meetings with the department to discuss the planning for the allocation. There's obviously a very big drive from ourselves as South African hockey, and I think that the department shares in the sentiment, in making sure that we can present a product to corporate South Africa that can help us to make the organization as a whole a lot more sustainable. A product where sponsors can buy into it, a product that will be on TV on a regular basis, and broadcasters can actually buy into that event. So we will be establishing the Premier Hockey League. It will kick off in the current financial year. We're looking to having our first game on the 3rd of September. So we are well underway in terms of making sure that we deliver on what we have discussed with the department and where our members see us moving to as South African hockey. Obviously, you know, in terms of the work that the International Hockey Federation is doing globally, they're trying to make sure that hockey becomes a globally recognized sport, to make sure that there are bankable events that can be packaged for corporate sponsors, that can be packaged for the end user, as well as for broadcasters. So we're following very much in the same trends of making sure that we have a good offering. Just as much as soccer has an offering, rugby has an offering, hockey, netball, basketball, we're all following the same trend. And I think we must commend the department for making sure that the so-called Cinderella sports are also given the opportunity to be in the commercial forefront of sports. We've been very happy to see the Brutal Fruit Netball Cup on television, being videoed, being broadcast as much as you see Curry Cup being broadcast. So for us, it's been a very positive move from the department, and we're happy to be part of that fold. Just in terms of what the Premier Hockey League is, just in one slide, we're saying we want to have one central venue. This is obviously going to assist us with managing costs and to manage logistics, and assist us with all of our discussions from a broadcast perspective. We're saying that there will be 6 men's and 6 women's teams. There was a lot of discussion and debate around this particular element as to, you know, with the funding that we have, what can we afford to do? What's the best approach to take in the interest of the sport? Is it going to be men only? Is it going to be women only? And I think in every presentation that we've made to the committee and in the way that we present hockey to the South African public, this is a sport for both genders. And as far as possible, we've got to ensure that we're trying to the equality in the sport in terms of the genders. So for us, it was a non-negotiable. We couldn't go into a situation where we only have 9 provinces with only 9 teams, either men or women. We had to make sure that we can't spread to cover the entire base of South Africa. So you'll see, even when we look at the names of the teams, we've tried to make sure that we make this a league that is owned by South Africans and people can relate to all the teams. All matches we played on Saturday and Sunday, probably about 95% of our member base is university students from a senior hockey level. We've got to then cater for the academic requirements as well as for those people that are employed full-time. So we made sure that all of our games played on a Saturday and Sunday. So teams would then travel into Johannesburg on a Friday. They'd play their match on Saturday. If they're not playing Sunday, they can fly out first thing Sunday morning. If they are playing Sunday, they can then leave Sunday evening. So they come Monday morning, they can report back to work, or they can report back to classes if they're students, and still be able to maintain those commitments. We've gone about it in a very interesting and different way, and those that are on social media would have been able to follow the Premier Hockey League, where we had a draft. We created the 6 teams and we gave them our key players. So we said these are the core players in every team. Every team has a 4 marquee players. The rest of the players were then made up for a draft system. And I must say, it has been very well received within the hockey public, and I think it's also been received very well by media and publications. And as South African hockey, from our high-performance perspective, it has given all of our coaches and all of our selectors and talent identifiers the opportunity to participate in the league. From the time that they drafted the names of players to consider, it was a very collective approach to say, who are the most talented players in South Africa from all the regions across the board? Let's give every player an opportunity. So now it's no longer an issue of you went to this good hockey school, so you make a provincial team or you make a national team. We gave opportunity to as many players as possible. And I must say, myself personally, it was very fulfilling watching the coaches learning about every single individual player. So no player was left out because nobody knows who they are or what talent they bring to the system. So the USL player draft, just to give you an example, each coach would choose a number out of a hat, and they would have an opportunity to pick their first player. Then they'd have in the second round an opportunity to pick their second player. So they actually built up their team. And we created an event around that alone to obviously create talkability about the Premier Hockey League prior to actually launching it. We'll have it over 4 weeks. Once again, very compact, good for broadcasters, good for commitment from athletes. So 4 weeks compact, over 2 weekends, over 2 days per weekend, starting on the 3rd of September up until the 25th of September, and we strategically look to those dates as well, so that we don't fall within academic time. So these players will then be able to go back and recoup themselves to their studies or to their knowledge. We'll have a total of 40 matches across both events. The team identities, as mentioned earlier, based on famous SA places and areas. And the good news, it will be broadcast live on TV. There will be live matches that we broadcast daily, as well as there will be matches that will be live streamed, so people that are sitting in their offices or at home, if you happen to be working on the weekend, you can watch it live streaming. And all the matches that are being live streamed will also then be broadcast late, so there will be an opportunity of repeat matches. And when you discuss these issues with their sponsors, this becomes very attractive because they want to see how much traction they can have within the media space. We've also said that, you know, we've got to look forward to Vision 2022. We've got to always cast our eyes forward and make sure that all planning we have in place now is going to serve a greater purpose later on. So Vision 2022, we know that we're going to have a massive support back home. We know that Commonwealth Games is coming to South Africa. We're happy that Treasury has committed to that process. And we're now looking at Durban 2022 to see how do we start working now with what we have on the table. As much as we might not have any financial allocation at this point in terms of preparation of our teams and planning to medal in Durban, but we must start working with that in mind. So we've looked at the age groups of the players, and we've given opportunities to a lot of our under 18, under 19, under 21 players within the teams that we've made up for the Premier Hockey League. Just in terms of data, I'm not going to go through that in great detail in terms of who the hockey spectator is, who the hockey fan is. This is information that sponsors obviously look to make sure that if they're sponsoring a sport, does it speak to their audience as a corporate. So we've managed to do that exercise, and that information is available for sponsors. In terms of where the Premier Hockey League fits into our event calendar, we've mapped up what we think is a workable calendar, also looking to making sure that in future we can attract broadcasting of most of our events. At the moment, we only have a commitment for Premier Hockey, but we want to make events that are going to be sellable. I think a lot of sports, and specifically the big three, are making a lot of inroads in terms of generating income just from broadcast. So we'd like to also start competing in that space. The Premier Hockey League fits in September, as mentioned. We've also created two new events to complement our existing calendar, which is a national finals event, which will be in December. My colleague spoke about our drive to promote hockey fires as an alternative to the 18-person, I was about to say 18-man game, but 18-person game, and to make it an exciting event that competes like with the T20s of cricket. We've identified the January, February, and a little bit into March as an international space. A lot of top international teams are regularly traveling to South Africa. And often we find out when they are already here, purely because they've come to train and they base themselves at our various high-performance centres that we have around the country. They see this as a premier destination, and they see South Africa as a destination of choice. So we want to back on that. If we are a destination of choice, how do we then make sure that as South African hockey, we benefit from the presence of these top teams in the country? So we created an event around that period. We already had invitations from England, Australia, New Zealand that are very keen to travel to South Africa and Holland, and these are the top nations within the hockey spectrum. So we have a new event around there. They love Cape Town. So it will be central around Cape Town because they can obviously then fit in all of the tourist elements as well into Cape Town. We want to start promoting locations such as Durban because of the Commonwealth Games. So we're also now looking to see what can we mold around KZN. And we don't have only an influx of international hockey coming to Cape Town. I'm going to skip that slide. Just some key assumptions, as we said in slide one, all matches in one venue. I think this is basically a repeat of the previous one. And we said that with the Premier Hockey League, we want to create a festival of hockey. We want to make sure that from a spectator's focus, it becomes a place to be. Often as administrators, we are very bogged down with the game itself, with the technical aspects of the game, that the pitch is working, the players, the kit looks good, etc. But we actually forget the spectators and the people that are going to drive your commercial strategy in the long run. So we want to create a festival of hockey. We want to have some live music, live bands if possible. Just create an entire experience out of the event. So when somebody says, I'm going to hockey, I know what to expect. If they're going to like a rugby sevens match, I think you've seen how festival it is on TV. People dress up, they have vibrant colors, because that fits into rugby sevens. We want to have similar approaches to hockey, that when people go to hockey, they know exactly what the fan experience is going to be like. And those are just some images to look at how we want to reposition the sport and make sure people will come in, they'll have good food. I think you've seen how the other cultural festivals are so popular with the food and wine shows we have in South Africa. And people go there just to make sure that they're part of the entire experience. That's our logo. It's fresh in our minds, vibrant colors, really appealing to a very big youth audience. As we said, in year one, 6 teams. Each team is made up of 18 players, so that's 216 players in total. And that's the opportunity that the Premier Hockey League has created to be able to reach those 216 players. And as I said earlier, specifically targeted, because our vision is Durban Commonwealth Games. The teams will be selected on a strength basis and in line with SA Hockey's transformation policy. The players and the teams will be representative of all 9 provinces in South Africa, because we've drafted all players from all the provinces. In terms of the names, and this is where I said we've generated a lot of interest. If you look at what we've got, in terms of names, we have in the areas out of Northern Gauteng, Limpopo and Mpumalanga, we've got the Mapungubwe Mambas. In the area out of, and as well as the Blood River Bunches on the women's side, we've got the Azo Elephants and the Namakwala and Daisies. This covers the Eastern Cape, the Free State and the Northern Cape areas. We've got the Drakensberg Dragons as well as the St. Lucia Lakers. This covers a lot of the KwaZulu-Natal area. We've got the Marabeng Cavemen and the Madikwe Rangers, which covers northwest and just part of southern Gauteng. We've got the Garnroot Gazelles as well as the Wineland Wings, which covers a lot of the Western Cape areas. We've got the Golden Gate Gladiators and the Orange River Rafters. This covers Eastern Cape, Free State and Northern Cape. So we try to bring everybody in and have more of a tourist-driven approach to say, this is South Africa, this is what the country is about, and everybody will obviously be allocated to those teams, and people can feel part of general South Africa. In terms of team logos, we've created team logos for all of the teams. Also, once again, we've looked at vibrant colors. We've tried to make this as trendy and vibrant as possible for the audience that we're trying to target. The kit, same story, very vibrant colors, bold. And we think that the players are really quite excited about what we presented to them. Those are some of the logos as well on the main side. That's the main kit. We've looked at the fixtures. As we said, on every morning on a Saturday, we'll have a youth clinic to make sure that we can bring youngsters to one experience being coached by top level coaches, as well as experience being coached by some of our national players that are involved in the teams. And it's basically a full day. So we start at 8 a.m. in the morning and the last match is at 6 p.m. in the afternoon. We're looking to have the finals a little bit earlier so that people can travel out. And that's pretty much almost a repeat of what we've said previously. Just the marketing strategy, we obviously want to be very big on social media, have a very big presence. SABC Sport, not sure at this stage, because we're in very big discussion with SuperSport, who presented a compelling argument to us in terms of broadcasting that. But we want to obviously work through our provincial hockey clubs, our local schools. Each team has an ambassador, which we have pre-selected, and the ambassadors are assisting us with branding the team and starting to create the brand identities and to create a following for all of their teams. We're on all social media channels. And obviously there will be live broadcasts. Just in terms of branding opportunities for sponsors, this is what we've sent out. So sponsors will have the opportunity to either be a category sponsor for the event itself, to have naming rights for the event itself, or teams sponsors will have the opportunity to have commercial rights to all of the different teams. And we've looked at various sponsors to try and match team identities with areas that a lot of sponsors are working in. Our vision largely in terms of sustainability is to develop a Premier Hockey League that over a 2 to 3 year period becomes financially sustainable via sponsors and other commercial revenue sources. The funding that we are getting from the Department of Sport is obviously going to help us to launch this event and to create the event itself and create the identity of the Premier Hockey League. But in the long run, we have to make sure that it becomes commercially sustainable. We're making sure that we are able to get sponsors on board. And that's it on the Premier Hockey League, which basically then covers the aspect of the funding.
President?
Well, thank you. Basically, some of our presentation in terms of where we're trying to go with our 10 million, and it's taken a lot of work and a lot of time. I think that we've given us the opportunity to move forward with our Premier Hockey League.
chances so that we can just grow the game. We're very, very excited. It's only 2 weekends away, we have to thank the department for giving us this opportunity. We've seen the other sports like netball and basketball. We believe that we can be better than that, and I think that's why we've also taken a conservative step with our Premier Hockey League. We haven't just dived in there and tried to use nine males and men and women teams in terms of our geopolitical boundaries. So we've only kept it to six, and I think this gives us the opportunity to actually grow and maybe include another 2 teams next year. So thank you very, very much.
Thank you, President. Members, we were joined by Honorable Chaisa, but he had to leave because he's attending another committee meeting. I've also noted the presence of the minister's office, Cabo, there. So I think he has noted your many thanks. So, members, there it is. Can we then comment, ask questions? This is our time. Honorable Marazzi, Herkman, Muteka, Bear, Honorable Abrams, Honorable Musi, and Manana, in that order.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks to the delegation for their presentation. My question is based on the very first presentation that we got, particularly on the point of taking the sports to disadvantaged communities, more for the modified version of hockey. I mean, all that is great, and I understand that given the limitations perhaps of the presentation, you gave us a broad indication, just mentioned the region. But can you indicate to us, like, where exactly are these schools, and which schools are they, so that we can, for our own purposes, be able to establish they are indeed in disadvantaged areas. And secondly, on the issue of infrastructure, you talked a lot about aligning, you know, club development with primary schools. And we would just want to know that relationship between those schools so that we can be able, again, for ourselves to establish that linkage. The second question is on the issue of the league. I mean, I find it interesting that on the one hand, there's this move towards aligning with SASCOC's recommendation of the geopolitical boundaries, but on the other hand, for the purposes of the league, it's done based on the, you know, you can argue the old geographical demarcations, although you've combined the teams. But shed more light in terms of how those teams are then selected to be clustered into those regions, and the two key missing factors there with regards to the Premier League is now 2 weeks before the championship kicks off. I mean, you mentioned that there are discussions with sponsors. What is the status as of now, 2 weeks before the league? Are there any sponsors in addition to the financial contribution made by the department? And what is the value of that sponsorship, and how long will that sponsorship run? And more importantly, in terms of remuneration of players, is there remuneration of players? What is the remuneration of those players? And how long will the league run beyond this? Because you understand that this year, SA Hockey is the federation there, but what is the long-term guarantee or the immediate-term guarantee that is there? And just on the financial statement, if you can just also share, you know, some light there. I see that for the financial year ending 2015, I mean, that figure is 93,184, and then for 2016, the figure almost doubled. In fact, it doubled to just over 230. You can shed more. Is it simply because there were far more meetings, or the size of, you know, the delegations of meetings, you know, increased? Because to double up that expenditure just seems, you know, extraordinary, but I'm sure it's a good reason for us to share with us that reason. But also when you compare that with tournaments, and I'm cognizant of the fact that you've broken up tournaments into two aspects here, but on the expenses in terms of tournaments, you look at that figure and the preceding year is 11,974, and for the other year is 24,509. You know, it's a rise. I mean, for me, when I juxtapose that with the meetings, you know, there is no correlation. But I'm sure you can explain further what was the correlation that drove, you know, the increase on expenditure and meetings vis-a-vis the revenue generated on actually hosting tournament, or if this is actually hosting tournament. Because there's another line item where you talk about revenue generated from tournament, and that seems exceptionally high. You know, when you contrast that with the action management on tournament and times.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, I think the big elephant in the room, and I'm surprised it hasn't really been touched on emphatically, is the fact that the hockey teams weren't chosen for the Olympics, and there was a big thing about it, and I was hoping to see a bit more fight as to either the disappointment that they weren't chosen or what they're doing to rectify the constructive criticism. And I think if there was constructive criticism given to SA Hockey as to what they needed to do to improve on the Olympics, to get into the Olympics, I know that Tescock was here and I spoke about they had given SA Hockey in 2010 a set of objectives to achieve before they'd be able to qualify for the Olympics. I'm interested to know what it was, how we haven't reached it, what we're going to do to reach it. You know, it's almost like we've given up, and I really believe that judging by what we saw and what we were capable of doing, it's almost a sin to sit here and not talk about it. In terms of the barriers to entry, I've got a problem with this. You know, I often find with, when we talk about transformation, which is another big bugger in the room, sports like cricket and hockey have a high barrier to entry for the simple fact that to equip yourself safely requires shin guards, gun guards, a whole lot of extra pieces of equipment. Now, this is not always easily shared. I mean, you're talking about something personal like a gun guard or shin pads. Each individual requires their own equipment. Now, these barriers to entries, it's all very good and well that we can hand out 10 pieces of equipment to 10 children in the school. We appreciate any bit of donation, and please don't let me sound I'm grateful for what I'm saying. However, we're talking about widespread participation. You're talking about mass participation. So what do we do to try and achieve mass participation? How do we lower these barriers to entry? So if the new ball that they're using is maybe lighter, and you don't need the gun guards, and you don't need the shin guards, and the stick is now rubber, you know, it does take for less equipment, but we have to start moving towards equalizing the playing field. So whatever's good for one school must be good for the other. We need to find how it is that we not lessen the quality of the skill and the quality of the game and quality to advance in a career in hockey that could be competitive worldwide, but that we also make sure that we're not closing doors to people that cannot afford to equip themselves in these circumstances. Finally, this Premier Hockey League seems great. It really seems like something that you want to launch properly. It seems like something that, you know, just in my mind, I see the playing cards coming out in stores, I see you know, all the trading taking place and people watching on the TV to see their favourite player being traded or whatever the case may be, you know, trying to catch up to the RPL Cricket League, which I can see is the want and the theme that's the basis of this. However, again, as my colleague has mentioned, with 2 weeks to go, you know, it almost seems as if you're trying to rush something, and if we got it off wrong, to try and get that momentum, you know, so an aeroplane that takes off, that critical part of takeoff is just as it takes off. You've got to have that speed, otherwise you're just going to fall out of the sky. Now with hockey, this with regards to this KHL, we need to have that critical speed, and that critical speed entails interest, entails the understanding of the format, advertising, getting out there, getting the message out there to all the schools who are all, you know, in any single format. And 2 weeks ago, I'm just worried that this is, and I really don't understand the doom of gloom, but we have opportunities here to really launch something great. You know, people that don't watch cricket or people that don't watch soccer or rugby, they have something that is part of, and is unique. They have something that can really, really create mass participation from all sides. And I just believe that we need to make sure that we do it the right way the first time around, that we get a critical mass just as we take off, so that we can really take off. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me start by welcoming the presentation from the hockey team. My question number one is, I think Honorable Mala has already dealt with that. Let me just stress, because we believe the general statements cannot help. Let us know exactly where are the hubs and these hubs. Because we know for a fact that the, just to say Africans and females will benefit out of this thing is not enough. We have to be specific that in Khayelitsha we have something like this. For example, in KwaZulu-Natal rural area, this place we have this. In Limpopo we have this, so that we can know and we can go out there and tell our people who keep coming. But in general, it's not enough. The main goal of this fifth committee is to find the rural kids benefiting from sport in general. That's why we want specifics. Not only rural, even the poor countries. The number two question is, these areas where the hockey is not known, they've never seen it, and they don't know about it. How are you helping them so that they also be part of South African hockey? How are you helping them? Because the requirement for them to benefit is to have trust. That's number one, to have trust. So how do you help them to have those trust, to establish trust? Because you can't establish a club of some people like that. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Yes, I'd also like to align myself with the 100 target schools. Where are they, in which provinces? Mention has been made in a few, but we'd like to know where they are so we could get in touch with them. Thank you for the presentation. It sounds very exciting when you hear about the presentation. I just hope we'll be able to see the actual implementation. I'd also like to know how was these schools, what criteria was used to identify these schools, and what marketing methods have you used to actually let all schools and clubs and everybody out there know about it. Then I believe that if one implement things, you need to have some support system. What support system do you have for the, like you mean, the random of understanding? There's quite a lot of questions in that document. How do you support people to actually understand and comply with what they think? You mentioned the collecting of the data for EOA, I agree. But how do you again assist in educating in that regard? It's easy to read the document, but if you don't understand how to actually complete it to and to comply. Also, your learnership, how do you define specific black Africans? I always ask the question, I'm black, and I'm the right person to define for specific black Africans. Do you to administer and promote in certain black Africans? Very important, that question. Some black African club development programs. Also, where are these some? I'd like to know specifically where. Do you have mentorship programs? In your document, you mentioned mentorship programs, but how intensive is mentorship programs? Do you monitor and evaluate it, and how frequently do you do that so you can follow up if there's any errors in between? interesting painting on your last presentation. There's the last page, a beautiful picture, all white youth in a picture. What do you base your 56% fan base? You know, while what I see there and what I also hear, I'm a Rocky fan. What information did you use to base it on? Thank you.
No, thank you, Chairperson. Let me also comment the team for the program that they intend to come up with. It is always good, Chairperson, to start training children at their very tender age. I love the program of, you know, introducing hockey at the foundation phase. But Chairperson, what I just want to check as my first question is that when you start them at that age and obviously you tend to increase the number of participation of hockey. And it is a fact that you do not have many facilities in the country, or facilities. How do you intend to increase, you know, the number of facilities as the number of people are participating grows? That would be my first question, Chairperson. But my second question, Chairperson, is that I heard you indicating that you want to do this, you want to do that, you want to attract youth, and you do not have your time frame in that. You just indicate that we want to attract youth, we want to attract participation of youth, but you don't have the time frame. I was expecting that at least you would be saying by this period we would have attracted, you know, so many youth, we would have done this and that. That would be my another question. But my other question, Chairperson, is that in as far as the affiliation fee and the levy is concerned, do I have to pay the levy even if you know the club have you know affiliated pay the affiliation fee? That's another question, Chairperson. My other question is that would your president, your entourage, say with confidence that the program that we have of introducing hockey at the foundation phase conforms directly, you know, to the curriculum of the Department of Education? Would you say with confidence that it is compatible, it does not have any hindrance? I would like to know that. But Chairperson, lastly, you have indicated, Ms. Kandini, that you have 72,000 deficit. What is going on that issue? You may just quickly sum it up. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, I must just follow to my colleagues by accepting by accepting your presentation. It's a very good one. But there are some other issues that they were not even supposed to be in this program, because there's a lot of presentation, but some of them that you came just to show us how does this look like, how does the memorandum of understanding look like. I can see you even have a very good apparel for the hockey. It's very good when I look at it, although it's a black and white color, but it looks good. And I thought maybe you will touch even the Rio, because I understand that you were qualifying. I don't know what happened, or there is some other issues that you did not, that made you not to qualify. But on my side, I thought the hockey qualified. So the president, I think she listened through you. You give the president maybe just some few minutes when he's about to respond to tell us what did the president of ASCOT say about hockey going to Rio. As I was saying, that it's a very good one. especially, so I just want to ask our guest, Chetasin, about their achievement as a hockey South Africa. What did they achieve on a previous program? Because this is a very good program. If they did implement this program on a previous year, I think they were supposed to be far. They were going to be about 50% now. At this time. So even the previous committee on sports ever asked, requested our guest to go and develop the game of hockey in deep rural areas. So we did agree on that. I just want to find out in that last meeting of the previous committee, which provinces did you implement did you develop the game of hockey? And if it's a rural area, maybe you can mention and give us the statistics to the committee so that when we go for the oversight, we'll be able to go straight to those places where you have identified, you have developed the hockey on those areas. And I must welcome even the memorandum of understanding. It's very good, together with the safety rules for the hockey. And actually, my question also, it must go to, there is a team that is under 13, the hockey team in Western Cape. Those, I just want to find out who are the sponsors of that team. But there is another team, they call it here in Mandela, Mandalay, in Cape Town. That team is a hockey team, they are struggling. They can't get any support. Even at the provincial level, they can't get any support. They've even failed to go and participate at Malmas Ferry here in for the games, the hockey games. But nevertheless, because of the lack of support, they did not even go and participate in that tournament. So I can even see your percentage are going a bit by bit, as you are standing on 28%. Hopefully next time we come back, you'll be standing above 8%. That shows a progress. And last thing, Chairperson, I want to request to our guests, in future, they must just send the presentation earlier, maybe a week before, so that we can look at our presentation. And if we don't have enough time, maybe if we get it like today and the meeting is tomorrow. It's not easy for us to study all this presentation and come back and post questions to you. Thank you.
Welcome, Mabie. Do you want to say something about hockey?
Yes, sir.
I know you didn't get the opportunity of getting a presentation.
Thanks, Chair. I was here a long time ago. Just in CV. A lot has been covered by honorable members. But what I wanted to raise Chairperson is on the school development program. As I was listening here, I heard that the program that they are busy with is urban-based. It's based on the urban schools. For instance, when they say they've targeted 8 schools, but that are 5 kilometers away from the facility, you will only find that kind of situation in urban areas. So I was then expecting to hear from the team as to what will be their school development program in the rural, in the deep rural areas, because you will not find a situation where there are 5 schools in 5 kilometers apart from each other. Because if that is the case, if that is the only program they have, it would mean that they do not have a plan to take hockey into the schools. For instance, where I come from, at Mukanyawood, I never heard of such a code called hockey. So if this is only the program that they are helping to develop. It will mean they need to go back and develop a new program altogether, which is going to cater and accommodate the schools from deep rural areas. Thank you, sir.
In terms of trying to answer all the questions, I think maybe we should just start with the Olympics, and at least we can get that out of the way. I've only been in the chair for about 4 years, so prior to 2010, Marissa was also not in the chair, we're not involved with the chair hockey, but we inherited a strategic, or rather the rules of SACOC as to us being allowed to go to the Olympics. It was said that we weren't allowed to qualify to Africa any longer, and that we had to go to specific tournaments in the world. I was coming into the last Olympics, which was London, where the girls had to go to India and win a tournament there to be able to go to the Olympics, even though they were the African champions. And the boys had to go to Japan and qualify there, actually win that tournament, to be able to go to London. So that's how it all started. And I think for many other sports in those days, it was exactly the same. So, Marissa, if you can elaborate on that.
Just with regard to these particular games, we obviously have discussions with SACOC in terms of what the qualification criteria is going to be. So they set what they call a general qualification criteria, which applies in terms of a blanket approach to all sports federations, and then they have something called a sport-specific qualification criteria, where they take hockey, for example, and they look at the qualification criteria which has been signed off by the International Olympic Committee as well as the International Federation itself. And they look at combination of those two, and then they focus on, well, this event be an achievable target for South African hockey. In this particular round, the criteria that was set was that we had to qualify through an international tournament. That qualifying through the continent is not going to be good enough, nor will it be sufficient. SACOC historically has always had concern around the level of competition on the continent. We presented counter-arguments with regard to the fact that the men's team had already not even made it into the tournament that SACOC wanted us to qualify through. They've not made it into round three of the World League tournament. So automatically the criteria would exclude the men's team before we even sign off the criteria. The women's team were in round three. At round three, they were already competing against teams that would most likely be at the Olympic Games. So our whole argument was that you're already wanting us to compete for the final teams that will be in Rio before we even get to Rio. And it's not an achievable target for South African hockey based on where our team's ranking was released. So the women's team went to an event with 8 teams, and already at that event they were seeded as 6th side. And they had to achieve top 3 for automatic qualification. So for us, we're saying they're already the 6th seeded side. To move from 6th to 3rd is a huge jump in a space of one event and a couple of days in between. So that is our counter-argument which we presented to SACOC. They obviously had a look at the arguments, and they did not accept the argument presented by South African hockey. We still believe, till today, that the decision made was not in the best interest of this particular sports code. And it was not in the interest of servicing African hockey as a continent. I think you will have seen at the Olympic Games there was not a single African representation when it came to the sport of hockey. And that was the belief that South African hockey historically always sits in. So we had to obviously accept the ruling. We had to make submissions via our International Hockey Federation directly to the IOC. The IOC considered the submission made by South African hockey, and they accepted that they would back the National Association, obviously that being represented by SACOC. So
And in terms of the regulations of the IOC, the decision of the IOC is final. So we could not then lobby that decision further. Some people argue perhaps we should have gone the legal route, and we should have ended up in the court of arbitration. So at the end of the day, depending on which route you chose, you could not have an alternative route. We opted to go through the International Hockey Federation and go directly to the IOC because that is permitted within the Olympic Charter itself. And that did not obviously receive any traction with the IOC, and we had to then accept the IOC's decision as final. It will always have a lasting impact, I think, on a certain generation of athletes who've lost out on that opportunity. And it is something that has been regrettable on our part. It's been regrettable for the athletes concerned. As I said, it will take a very long time for us to recover. We will see now after these games where we will be ranked. The sport of hockey is such that if you don't go to international competitions, you do not get ranking points. So you can't keep moving up the ranking ladder. And as we've indicated in our finances, our athletes are paying. Our athletes currently are paying to travel to events. If we don't have that commitment from athletes, and we don't have the commitment from commercial South Africa to support the team, we will not get ranking points. There's further arguments to say, if we knew right at the beginning that SASCOC was not going to allow us to go with the African qualifier, why did we still participate? Because we then automatically blocked an African country. That has also been an argument that's been positioned on. Unfortunately, the way the competition structure is currently with the Africa Hockey is that they use the Africa Cup of Nations as the Olympic qualifying tournament. At that tournament, they are ranking points. And being a country that's always chasing ranking points because we're trying to stay within the top 15 in the world, we had to participate. So we participated at that event. Our teams obviously won the event. We picked up the 650 points that were available from that specific tournament. And hopefully through those points, we could still stay within the top 15. We will now see what the new ranking allocation is going to be post the Olympic Games, because the FIA will now review all the points, and we'll see where SA Hockey teams will then stay. It also, you know, the ranking points are so important, determines which level of competition you're allowed to participate in. And if you're not allowed to participate in the most of the events, it means you're still chasing ranking points. It's another discussion we presented to SASCOC, saying we need to review whether is it ranking points that's important or is it performance. How do we gauge performance? And I think it's something that we have left on the table for discussion. To answer the question with regards to the cost of the meeting, for some reason in the past they weren't having the constitutionally mandated number of meetings. So our internal constitution states that we need to have 4 executive meetings a year, 2 council meetings and an AGM. And before they were not meeting their target, and the reason why cost has doubled is because now we are ensuring with regards to our MOA that we are sticking to the constitutional required meetings. If I may just add also, I mean, it's been indicated that it's obviously quite a huge jump from 93,184 to 200,230. And as one has indicated, one, we've had an increase in the number of meetings, but what we've also done is that we've been spending a lot of time going directly into regions and going to meet with executive councils and executive committees in various provinces, because we find that we have 2 people that come to a meeting from every province, but we're not actually interacting with the executive boards of all of those provinces. So there's an increase in provincial visits from our side, also from a monitoring perspective and engaging. And secondly, we have sponsorship for accommodation. Very grateful to Tilko Sun for assisting us in that regard. We have now used a larger part of that accommodation sponsorship for the national teams because there is no funding. So where we were able previously to use sponsorship for both national teams and for the business of the executive, we've now had to try and use as much of that accommodation exclusively for the national team. So it has obviously driven up costs in terms of the executive and council meetings.
And that's due piggyback on that as well with regards to the question about support systems and education with the, you know, filling out all the documents and understanding that. As the head of governance for Fakir Hockey, I then do travel to all provinces once a year to ensure that we sit with them, myself, Gary, as the project manager, that we sit with them and we explain all necessary governance requirements, all documents, and we work through everything that we need to work through. The MOA is the exact same process. We set a date with the entire executive board of that particular province, and we sit through all the documents that we need to sit through with to ensure they are compliant. So it is, like I said, we have a small office. There's 3 people in our office, so us as volunteers have to do a little extra every time, and that is how we then provide that support. We go and we sit with each and every executive of each and every province each and every year to ensure that compliance.
Thank you very much. I think I have a massive load to answer in terms of the rollout strategy. Can I start with the number of pilot projects that we have done? Now, unfortunately, what I will do, in fact, I'll have to submit the names of all the schools. These are the areas that we're involving, and I have the names of the schools here. So the first area would be Westbury. Westbury, that is in the Johannesburg area, the Gauteng area. Currently, we have a partnership with the department, the Provincial Department of Sport and Education, and they've targeted Westbury as one of our activations. I have the names of the schools in that particular community. The people that are aware of Westbury, currently they are under tremendous pressure in terms of gangs, and hopefully we can make an impact with the schools that we've identified there. I have the names of the schools. I can forward it, in fact, to see you later on. And then the other area that we're involving, in fact, in the Free State, Northern Free State, the Bow River, we have the names of the schools in the Free State area. We're also involving in the Eastern Cape. We involved in the Nelson Mandela Metal. We have 10 schools there located in the Galvinville area, which is based at the facility that is the Case March facility. Also in the Eastern Cape, we have Nkokone, the Ellis area. We've got 10 schools identified by that particular innovation there. We've launched that at the University of Fort Hare on the 9th of August. I will give you the names of the schools involved. They have received equipment. We have a project, in fact, in KwaMashu. I have the names of the schools in KwaMashu. And the last one that we are busy with is, in fact, in Buffalo Flats. That is in the Amatona district in London, within that particular community. That is where we are currently. In terms of the Western Cape, Kraaifontein, around the Bernardino Heights, we have 10 primary schools around that facility. We have a very good working relationship with the provincial department of sport. They are part of our partners there. They've indicated that the next growth area would be, in fact, Malmesbury. There's a facility at the school. We will do site inspection and hopefully get involved in that particular project. There's another facility that the department has built, Hansby, which they've indicated that they also would partner in that regard. And the last area that they identified was, in fact, the Mossel Bay area, which is the Grootbrug, where they also have a presence. And what we will do, we will piggyback on what they're doing. That's the size of the program that we have currently at Langa. Some of the schools in Ikwezi, one of the top schools in Ikwezi that attends, in fact, the summer games or the winter games. So we have a program running at Langa at the moment, and also we have a program central, which is in fact in Athlone. So those are all the pilot projects currently that we do have, but I will supply you with all the names of the schools that have received the equipment and as part of the program in terms of the current status. In terms of the clubs, what we do have, and I will supply this information, at the moment, in terms of the club grants, we have a huge number of clubs. 34 clubs that receive, in fact, some type of assistance via our club grants. These clubs are from all different regions. I can just give you some examples of these clubs. In the Eastern Cape, you would have Galvinville. You've got Connell Stars, which is based in Kwanabushle. Lakeside Cavaliers. You've got Invaders, based in the Z area, in the Cape Town area. You've got Mandalay that we have supported with a grant. But quite clearly, in fact, I know that the grant was sufficient because a lot of the money was spent, in fact, on transport. So that is a major, major issue in terms of, you know, our club grant system. We also have Kayacha, as well as Langa. We've got in the
Gauteng area, we've got Intouch based in the Alvarado Park area, we've got Silver Stars based in Gippsland, we've got Mbiza, Aston Verve based in also Alvarado Park. Strangely, in fact, this is not the name that is given to this club. Danger Zadaki is, in fact, based in Shinguve. That's a club, in fact, that established there. We've got Tabong in the Northern Free State. In the Eastern Cape area, we've got Duncan Village, Phoenix, Parkside, and United. And in the Mpumalanga area, Bushbuck Ridge, Leidenburg. In the Northern Cape, we have a number of clubs there. We've got Homevale. We have, in fact, Rebels, Diamond Park. Proteas and Saints, and William Ascot in the Corona capital area. We've got Inc, which is basically the Kwamashu that we support, and then quite clearly we also have Mountain Sports Club from Heidedal in the Free State. So 34 clubs that we do support in terms of our club grants going forward. In terms of the question dealing with how do we want to in fact infiltrate the rural areas in terms of piggybacking on the fundamental movement skills. I think that the document clearly outlines the modified hockey. There are two different documents here. The first document is totally aligned with the curriculum in terms of grade R and the foundation for in terms of life skills. You'll notice the first thing there, they talk about movement or locomotion. We've written the program in such a way that very little equipment is required. Very little equipment is required to in fact infuse fundamental movement skills within the curriculum. So there's an 8-week program where we start with locomotion or running, walking, getting in fact the footwork right, preparing in fact the participant, right, irrespective of what the code would be to get the fundamental movement skills right. Then we will progress, you'll see in the document as well, the next step there will be balancing, which is also one of the fundamental movement skills. The last one would be in fact a manipulation, where we would teach the different grips of different implements, either cricket bat or whatever, a hockey stick or a golf stick, whatever, but that is the grip that is fundamental in terms of fundamental movement skills. We believe if we can infuse this as part of the curriculum in the mainstream, it will give us an opportunity now to get into the rural areas and to all schools in terms of life orientation and life skills. We've also written in such a way, you'll notice that the second part in terms of the Hockey 5, modified sport, in our opinion, very, very cost-effective, doesn't require sophisticated surfaces, any smooth surface, irrespective of the classroom or a tennis court or a handball court. Right? The modified game lends itself to plastic sticks as well as, in fact, plastic balls that we are, in fact, trying to, in fact, develop now. In fact, I've got some samples. To try to grow the game at that particular level, or to activate certain communities or schools to participate in the modified game. So there as well, we have a comprehensive strategy, the second part of the document, which outlines the role and responsibility very, very clearly, how we want to grow the game in all sectors throughout the country. Also, one of the major drawbacks in terms of staffing, quite clearly, the only three staff members, the CEO, myself as the project manager, and the finance lady. So we rely a lot, in fact, on our volunteers. You know, a lot of our training happens in the evening or over weekends because of the availability of the volunteers. 95% of all the administrators would be, in fact, volunteers. And this is, you know, a major drawback, but also, I believe, the strength of hockey. So if we really, you know, look at the strategies that we want, in fact, to employ in terms of, number one, Hockey 5 as a throughout the year type of code, very cost effective, no expensive, let's call it now, arrow, all that stuff. You know, we're only using bits, and it's only 20 minutes. We believe that we can change the face of hockey by really implementing this as a strategy in all communities. So this document, basically, we need to go out into certain areas now and speak to the Department of Education and see exactly, you know, how we can piggyback on their programs within the schools, and we have the capacity to train some of the teachers in terms of life skills within that particular community. In terms of the other areas, our EPG report, in fact, the 2016 or 2015 report, what we have done, we've indicated all different districts, and unfortunately, that we can also make available where we are in which districts at the moment, factually, what we have reported on. We have 212 clubs throughout the country, 212 clubs throughout the country. It indicates which districts these clubs are in terms of the EPG report. It translates into 650 teams. So each club, in terms of what we want to achieve, would have three teams. And one team, in fact, as Marissa indicated now, really structure our club in such a way that they are all sectors. You would have male and female, you would have juniors, youth and seniors. That would be, in fact, our definition of a club. So we're working very hard in establishing that type of model throughout the country. In terms of number of schools, in fact, I can give you some of the figures. In the Eastern Cape, we have 26 clubs, and we have number of primary schools, 87 primary schools currently participating, and then we have 83 high schools participating in the entire Eastern Cape. And we've broken the Eastern Cape down into different districts, and in each district, the information would be available as per the EPG. All the other areas, if you have a look, in fact, one of our biggest areas, if you have a look at Limpopo at the moment, we would have 5 clubs, 48 primary schools, 21 secondary schools. In the Mpumalanga area, we have 10 clubs, 58 primary schools, 38 high schools, and then we have 11 independent schools. And generally, you know, all the information is here for the provinces. It gives us a total of 212 clubs, and all of that we have 38 junior clubs affiliated within that 212. We have 969 primary schools throughout the country in terms of our footprint, and then we have in fact 761 high schools participating actively in a hockey program, and 172 private schools in terms of the footprint. But all this information is available as part of our EPG report per province, and also in terms of education and training, how many courses we have done as per, you know, our targets for 2015 and 2016.
I think as well, to touch on that with regards to the question of what are we doing in the areas where hockey is not known or seen, and the deep rural areas, we've also got to accept that sports federations constitute civil society to a certain degree. And facility and infrastructure development cannot honestly be our responsibility alone. And that is one of the key components of what is killing us with regards to getting to those areas, right? Our job mainly with that is to go to the governments in those particular areas and advocate hard for the development of facilities in those areas, which is what we've been trying to do to a great level. You'll have governments in certain provinces in certain areas who are not interested in having a discussion with you. You'll have governments in certain areas who will tell you that, okay, yeah, we hear you, but that number 56 on our list or on our financial list, and those are some of the... So we have... It's not because we're not interested. For example, we are meeting at Gauteng, and we are shocked that in the biggest township in the country, so there's not a single drop of hockey activity, right? And when we speak to them, they tell us, no, our directive right now is revival, not activation. And we ask, okay, what do you mean? And they say, no, we want to revive areas where hockey has been. We will look at activation data in taking hockey or any sport into areas where they've never been. So that collaborative effort needs to happen, and we are working on that. Our role as activators for the growth of our sport, as activists for the growth of our sport, is that, and we are hoping for the assistance. We're not saying government, don't get me wrong, we're not saying government doesn't help. We're saying that in certain areas it's slower than what it ought to be. Because of whatever that government in that particular provincial area or in that particular district has set as their targets for the year. So for that example, we were told, no, wait on activation, wait on areas that aren't playing hockey right now. What we are prepared to assist you in this financial year with is to revive areas where hockey has existed historically and has since died. Alright, so I'm just giving an understanding of why in certain areas you wouldn't find it. Other provinces or other districts will tell you that hockey is not a priority for our area. Maybe football is what we are pushing this year. Or maybe netball is what we are pushing this year, and we'll have to wait out too. So it is difficult, and it is based on infrastructure a lot, because, you know, there's areas where you don't even have that kind of grass. We're not talking about an international level astroturf to teach children how to play hockey. We don't need a piece of grass or a piece of land where we are given an opportunity to let the kids play. So those are issues that are also a great hindrance for us, is that collaborative effort sometimes is slower than what we hope.
Thank you, Chair. Just to cover on some of the questions that were raised, particularly to the Premier Hockey League, that it seems a bit rushed with just over 2 weeks to go. I think we have done a great amount of work to make sure that we will be in a state of readiness on the 3rd of September. So for us now, it's the operational side of things to make sure that branding is up, the stadium looks good. We're working very closely with the city and with the Department of Sport to make sure that the facility will be up and ready. So yes, we've got 2 weeks to go, but we have done a tremendous amount of work around the league and making sure that the league will be ready. In terms of remuneration of players, that will be covered. In the 4 weekends of 8 matches, I think on average every player will probably play about 7. And for that, there will obviously be a fee for player of the match for every game, as well as there will be a fee for players that participate. We obviously also have a reserve pool of players that we've had to make sure that we allocate budgeting allocation in terms of any event we have to pull up a reserve player because of injury or whatever other unforeseen reason at this stage. So the agreed amount at the moment for players' remuneration is 2,500 for the commitment to the 4 weekends, and it will be a further fee of 2,500 for every player of the match that takes place up until the finals. In terms of the structure of the team, I think I'll just take you back to the vision for the PHL. We obviously have our interprovincial tournament, which is our traditional hockey tournament, our traditional selection tournament, our traditional participation profiles from the different regions. What we did not want to achieve with the league is to repeat our championships, our national championships, which is what we call our IPT. So the focus for us was not to repeat our interprovincial tournament, but to create something that is brand new and something that we believe will create an excitement and appeal to the sport of hockey, and a product where people can fully embrace the team and not have to worry that in the A section of the IPT there's no team from Limpopo, or in the A section of the IPT there's no team from Western Cape. We wanted to create an event that we believe will be commercially viable and sustainable. I think it's the only product we have on the offering at this stage which can attract sponsorship and can maintain some sort of income base for the sport generally. How the players are selected, we've gone with Vision 2022 to look at building teams for the Commonwealth Games and building a player base for the Commonwealth Games. Currently we sit at 250 players that at some point in their lifespan between now and Durban will be part of our process via the Premier Hockey League to make sure that those players from a high-performance perspective will be ready for 2016. So we've gone across the board and we've taken the top players in the country. And we've put the top players in the country in a pool, and the players have been drafted by the coaching staff. So that's how players have been selected into the Premier Hockey League. With regards to sponsorship, we've got a commercial strategy that we've gone up to the market. As you can imagine, from a timing perspective, a lot of sponsors in this period, July, August, September, already planning funding models for 2017. So that has obviously been a hindrance on our part in terms of making sure that we attract sponsors in year one of the Premier Hockey League. But we also understand that year one gives us an opportunity to showcase what the league can be and what the league will be able to promote. And for sponsors to actually sit up and say, hey, you know, there's more to sports than just rugby and football and cricket. There is something else called hockey, and if we can look at it, and it is on television because it is being broadcast. So we're seeing year one as an opportunity to showcase the sport and to showcase the league. But having been said that, we still obviously have gone to market. We've looked at obviously securing a headline event sponsor. We have not been able to secure this at this stage. We also don't want to just simply give away rights without any revenue that comes in for those rights. So even if we don't have a headline sponsor for year one, we will not just simply give those rights away. Especially, you know, some sponsors come to say,
you know, we've supported you in this way, we've supported you in that way, just give us the rights. And we say no, because we've got to be commercially sustainable. We cannot do that to the sport without making sure that we have the necessary income. We've got four category sponsors that we're looking at. Obviously, one of them is like a kit supplier, accommodation. So we've targeted those sponsors. And for the 12 teams, we're looking for individual naming rights for all 12 teams. Currently, we're already looking at 8. So we're still looking for the last 4 to make sure that every team will have its own naming rights sponsor. And these contracts are signed on a 3-year basis to make sure that we lock the sponsors and obviously hope to track them for the next phase of the Premier Hockey League. We believe that the lifespan of this league will be whatever we make it. So yes, at this stage, we're looking at 3 years because we've made sure that the funding will cover us for 3 years. But the lifespan of the Premier Hockey League basically will be what we make it and how successful the league is in the first 3 years.
We still want to make
a follow-up. let me start with Honorable Musi. Honorable Hartman, and then we'll end with Honorable Malachi. Yeah.
No, thank you, Mr. I actually have some questions that I posed to a person that I did not hear them being answered. Like, if I may remind you, person, I actually said that you know, for any team to have a measurable outcome, it should have, you know, a time frame. It should have target that look, we intend to train this number of people within this period. I said that to be answered. I did not hear it. I also asked about levies and affiliation fees, and that was not answered. I'm able to make some follow-up things.
Okay.
Okay.
Now, if you were to come in, you have a mistake. I have not looked at you. You'll come up a minute.
Thanks, Chair. You know, based on the answers, and I had this uncomfortable niggle before, but I would put it that possibly, you know, people often say whether they need a government because they pay a lot of rates and a lot of taxes, and they also have politicians on the stage, and they ask themselves, do they really need a government? I need to ask myself, do the players need an executive at this stage? They're paying their own way. They're fighting their own fight. And what I'm hearing is basically, well, we did a process. We escalated through a process. Have you done enough as an executive to say that you fought for the players, that you're actually a benefit, an asset to the players? And please, I mean, just understand the question. I know probably a lot of you volunteer your time, a lot of you have dedicated your time to this. So, you know, it's not an attack on you per se, it's an attack on the question on the actual system. That just seems that, first of all, when the SASOC decision took place, I had hockey people phoning me personally. And I was trying to fight to the court. I couldn't get hold of anyone from hockey. I'm trying to find out what it is that we're doing as an executive for the players. I think is the best way of putting it. But basically, if it wasn't for, my understanding is, if it wasn't for the 10 million rand cash injection, hockey would still be where it is. You know, it's only because of 10 million rand has almost breathed a new life into the game that we now found the excitement to launch this great league and what have you. Before the funds, where would we be? And I have to ask myself, I look at the balance sheets, I look at executive costs at hotels and that, and I'm just wondering to myself, if I was a player and I'm paying my own way to go everywhere, and my executives are getting their hotel fees and their travel fees given from the budget, am I being best served by an administration, or am I better off without the administration? And just please understand, I mean, if this is a company, I'm saying to you guys, should we not be resigning or recusing ourselves from the committee? So it's not in the check per se an individual, it's really I'm asking as a concerned delegate.
Thanks, Chair. My first follow-up is based again on the cost related to meetings. I mean, I'm a bit bewildered that in the response it says that previously meetings were held, you know, outside of the context. Institutional framework of the organization, which means in my view were regular meetings. and resources of the Federation were being used, you know, the reasonable expectation would then be what sort of corrective action has been being taken against, you know, those who were constituting regular meetings with the use of the resources of the organization, and to establish, I mean, when did that switch to irregular meetings, regular meetings, and then was the current leadership, you know, part of that? When did the intervention take place? And what are some of those things that we have now put in place to ensure that it won't happen? And related to that is the issue of, you know, this whole debate regarding the stance about whether we use continental qualifications or, you know, the International Hockey Federation, because I just need clarity on this, because what we are having now is a situation of South Korea Hockey saying, and there are a lot of inconsistencies between the two visions. When South Korea was here on the 23rd of February earlier in the year, the president said that there was an agreement to which hockey assented to at the time, that the continental qualifications would not be considered for Olympic participation, right? And that subsequent to that, whether it was halfway through that qualification process that you outlined, there was an appeal that was made to the board and the executive council, and that was denied for the initial reasons that were outlined. But there is something that played itself out in the media, in the form of a media statement that came from either the office of the CEO or the president of hockey, expressing disappointment about that. And from where I'm sitting, when you agreed, allegedly, as put by Lasco, and I'll put you to test that dimension of the story, when you allegedly agreed to that, what had changed when you then made a public call about your disappointment with regards to the non-consideration of continental standards as a way of qualifying for Olympic? Was it this in hindsight, or was it just an expression of disappointment? Because to me it seems like you're throwing your toys, because you agreed in the boardroom and then out there you put another version. And lastly, on the issue of fees for players, do these fees apply for both gender streams in terms of the two? You can get clarity on that, because that's another crucial matter. And lastly, I mean, are we now saying 2 weeks before that we also don't have a kit sponsor for the eight teams? And what are they going to be wearing? Who's going to be making what they're going to be wearing? That's my final question. Thank you.
Thanks, Jefferson.
Jefferson, I'm a bit disappointed. Not by what alone, but also by our department. We can't, at this point, 22 years into democracy, still having a sports code that benefits only the rich. The reason why I'm saying that is because these people, for traveling, they pay for themselves. They do all this for themselves. The poor cannot afford that. So it shows it's a sports protest. And again, the areas that have been outlined here, there's no rural areas here. So this is a sport for the previously advantaged groups. So we can't at this moment, 22 years into democracy, we're still having a department that says there's nothing for the ruler. Only those who have been in sports before can be helped. That's the explanation we're getting now here. We can only activate. We can only revive. We can activate. That means we can't start anything new. It means there's nothing for you, the rural communities. There's nothing for you, Soweto people. We're told here, even in Soweto, the biggest township in South Africa, hockey is not there. Nothing is happening. We can't allow it. I think the whole plan must go back, and then they must accommodate South Africa. We are here as a national government, and we are representing the whole nation. So we can't come here and talk only for the small, previously advantaged communities. Thank you very much.
Honorable Minister,
No, thank you, Chairperson. I just wanna say something, Chairperson, and I would actually make it a plea from the committee, and perhaps if you allow me, Chairperson, that maybe we need to, as well as you know, as the committee, to come up with something that perhaps we are we being reasonable when we say that hockey should be biased, towards rural areas. Do they have enough muscle? Do they have the capacity when we say they should do that? Do we say that the 10 million that they have is enough for them to extend their program to rural areas? Do we have as well as something I can come up with, Chairperson, if you may allow me, that we will propose that would add to the little that they have. It's not a big sport, and if we still talk of transformation in a sporting code as big as rugby, where they haven't, up to so far gotten too much into rural areas, then it isn't going to, worse with hockey. I understand what honorable members are saying, but I'm saying, Chairperson, that maybe we should come up with a plan to help hockey. Maybe we talk to Lotto, Chairperson, so that they come up with something, add a little bit on top of that, so that next time when hockey comes here and they seem to us that we have been concentrating only on urban areas, then we should say to them, but we have done this, we have added this much to you, that is not enough to you. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I was just befriended with the delegation from hockey, but they are not here because in future you must, when you come here, you mustn't afraid and being scared to say we are going to that committee where we're going to be penalized. Chairperson, we know exactly all of us. Not that I'm taking any part, because we must be fair. We know that sport is underfunded. What I will request to hockey, Chair, is that they must just go and kneel down with the sponsors to assist them, because when you look at the 10 million, it's 9 provinces, and they have to participate in any event. Like now they were talking about the African event, although I'm not happy that the official means the SASCOC or whoever body is, they are just ignoring if you have participated in the African countries, they're prioritizing the international bodies, I don't know. But besides that, Chairperson, I request that the hockey, I think we must just go back and ask the sponsors to assist you, because some other people, they don't take sports serious, and we have to take sports serious. I've seen that you have started as an early childhood for the hockey to assist up until to the tertiary. So if maybe this is our first meeting, what I must say is that you go back and prepare, you come up with a strategy to add in that 10 million, because with my understanding, the 10 million issue is very little. Very little, because when you look at when I look at your program, really, you have to walk all the regions, you have to walk all 9 provinces, but go to the deep rural area also. You must show the visibility, you must be visible, so that when our kids talk about hockey in the township and the rural area, the people, the deep rural areas, they must know what animal is hockey. So that when they look at, as they watch the TV, they mustn't just say, oh, hockey is a sporting coach that plays on TV only. So let's go back and do the sporting and speak to the sponsorship, whoever who can assist you. Maybe, so there are some companies that have interest, they are waiting there, unless maybe you come here and say, hey, we went to this sponsorship, as you mentioned all the sponsorship that you went there, participated. But anyway, we always ask the trainer that they must assist us with, since we are under parity as a school. This for the department also, they are under parity. Thank you.
Honourable members, we we are going to give them a chance to respond. But to just indicate that I think it's a good meeting that the meeting was okay. Because it's the first meeting, I mean, for the new committee. And it's most unfortunate that we are meeting with you 2.5 years into our term. There are other sporting codes that we have not even met. It's because of the way we are structured. But I think there is a sense given that the department has given you 10 million. And from where I'm sitting, I think to be stuck attaching to hockey, I think it's a good start. Personally, I think we should support you in terms of coming up with a league and hope that more sponsors will come with it. But from our side, I mean, as the portfolio committee, we are still going to try you on transformation, because you must remember that already we give you 2 million besides the 10, because 10 is one off. Mm-hmm. So we still expect you to be properly aligned, geopolitically properly aligned. You must still meet the transformation, because it's more about access, because we are moving from sporting codes that were previously protected, ensuring that all sporting codes, people must have access to those sporting codes. On the qualification, I think Honorable Malachi put it clearly. I mean, you agreed with SASCOP, that is what they informed us. So you need to deal with SASCOP, because SASCOP is your goal in regard to Olympics. It's your federation, it's your confederation that puts you through to Olympics. So once you have agreed with them as a national federation, you can't change. And I mean, from here, we should avoid the committee to play a federation with SASCOP, because we won't get to the truth. But those things are going to come in our meeting from time to time. But our approach really should be to ensure that the federation and SASCOP must clean their end and avoid seeing the things in the newspaper. And then leading to us now wanting to get to the truth. So I think whatever qualification, you've got the power to then ensure that you end up participating, because we want all sporting codes to participate internationally. So if you can respond to members, I just felt that so that we don't lose it, because part of what we are about is to track transformation. It means even on some of the federations that are elite or are providing for the very rich people, we still want to ensure that there must be access even in terms of those federations. And that is why the department is funding all the federations. Once it has agreed that these are a federation, and then we fund them. So we check in whether it's real for money, the question that was asked by some of the members here. So we won't stop that. So the issue of transformation, in terms of tracking, we are not going to stop that. Okay, if you can respond to members.
With regards to the meeting, it was not a regular meeting. It was less meetings than what they were supposed to have. So there were still proper meetings. I'm just saying it was not wasteful expenditure or anything like that. It was, instead of 4 meetings, they'd have 3 or 2 meetings in a year for whatever reasons. The reasons why no action was actually taken because it was then permitted or allowed by the Council of the of South African Hockey. I think the 1 year we didn't have two meetings because we couldn't get audit reports done or audited financials in time, and then the council was like, well, we're not going to come and sit here without audited financials, for example. So it's whatever, we would never not have the right amount of meetings if there was no reason, and if it was not permitted by the governance body, which is the Council of South African Hockey. So it was never wasteful expenditure, anything like that. It was just, they were having less meetings. And it was for whatever reason. Sometimes I think if it's World Cup as well, you can't meet as regularly because it's a tournament year, or, you know, in the past when we were qualifying for Olympics, everybody would be at the Olympics or something like that. But it was never, you know, misuse of organization funds or anything like that, though.
If it's my guy chance there, I recognize you.
Okay, thank you so much for the next round of questions. Just with regards to expenditure as the balance sheet, we obviously work within a framework as determined by our members, and our members only contribute towards administrative costs of running the organization. Members do not contribute to the cost of sending teams overseas. So that also needs to be quite clear to the committee. The responsibility then to find that money, some people have a feeling that the national teams or government must pay because the players are representing South Africa in its totality. So there is that view. Others have a view that corporate sponsors must come on board, but nobody can enforce that regulation. And obviously, a sponsor will decide which sport they prefer to sponsor for their own various organizational needs. So the administrative costs are only costs that we can allocate to the affiliation fees collected from the membership of the organization. With regard to a question that was raised earlier, also under finance, that we didn't cover, in terms of if you paid an affiliation fee, you also pay a levy. The levy is charged for a special project, and the special project would be a tournament. So if a team wants to get into a specific tournament, there's a levy specifically for that tournament. Some provinces find sponsorship to cover the levy. Other provinces will then charge out of the 18 players. They'll divide that levy amongst the 18 players, and then they'll charge the levy to the players. So it's not a question of paying twice. Affiliation fees for administrative support. The levies are specifically tailored around events, and that's largely to cover the costs of technical officials, umpires, etc., to make sure that the event will be taken care of in that regard. Costs relating to meetings, I think already we can see that there's been an improvement because of the finance that we're presenting now is from the previous financial year. So we can already see that in the 12 months preceding the expenditure of 93,000, it went up to 200 because there's been an adjustment to the need for more meetings within the organization, for the need for more organizational structure within the organization. So I think already we can see there's been a turnaround in terms of initial expenditure of 93, it's then moved up to 200. Yes, it might be a criticism just from a numbers perspective, but I think that it's a necessity in terms of making sure that the organization functions and that we meet our obligations with regard to ensuring that we are delivering on EPG, we're delivering on the transformation charter, and in terms of just meeting our members and having meetings even with local government, because we've also taken that responsibility onto our shoulders to ensure that we engage with local governments. A lot of our provinces will say, we get no support. So we have now said, okay, we will sit with provincial governments and see. We are priority sports code as selected by the National Department of Sports, but I think it's no secret that hockey might not be a priority sports code in all of provinces. So we have now taken to also engaging directly with provinces and making sure that we build relationships and try and facilitate and advocate for our provincial members. So I think it should be a commendation that we've moved from under expenditure around meetings to increased expenditure around meetings, because those have become a very much needed necessity in ensuring that there's engagement on the ground. With regard to fees for players within the Premier Hockey League, yes, it's for both men and women, so all 12 teams will benefit from that. With regards to kits, all the teams have got kits, and that will be handed out on the 2nd of September once the players have been convened. On the question of SASCOC and the qualification criteria, I think the Council of SASCOC itself
needs to play a bigger role in determining what is important for sports in South Africa. And yes, we are a member of council. We are one voice amongst the 78 codes of sport that sit in that room. And it is for us to also then drive the process of, do we believe that continental championships are important? Do we believe that participating in Africa is important in building sport in this continent? And I agree that, yes, we must be at the forefront of having those discussions with SASCO, because I know that a lot of money that goes into sending teams to all Africa games, sending teams to regional games in the continent, but we spend that money, and then we turn on and say it's not good enough. We can't have it both ways. So either we're saying it's important to be part of Africa, it's important to embrace the continent, or we say it's not important and we don't send teams. We can't send teams and then say it's not important. So I think as members of SADC, we need to engage in those discussions and make sure that we are promoting a unified Africa when it comes to events, global events, because we participate, yes, as individual countries, but when they look at us as a block and as a continent, we all celebrate Africa's achievements. So I take that as something to walk away with from the committee. And I take the statements, and I'm relieved that there's enough support around the room to say as many athletes must participate. And for the longest of time, we believed that athletes were not being allowed to participate because of finance. We had many corporate sponsors who come to us and say, is SASOC not sending you because they don't have enough money? What if we contribute to the cost? And it's always been put to us that that is not the case, because SASOC gets funding from the national department, as well as from the lottery, as well as from sponsors. So we've been told that it's not about money, it's about qualification. Yes, there were agreements that were put before every single federation to sign. In some meetings, you get told it actually doesn't matter whether you sign the agreement or you don't sign the agreement, because that is the criteria which is accepted by the executive board of SASOC and by council. The council accepts that Africa will not be good enough. And that's what I'm saying to this meeting. It's also our duty now to go back to the same council and say, perhaps we were wrong. That Africa must be viewed as a qualifying tournament. It was viewed for soccer. We were in exactly the same position in 2011 as football, where the only route available to hockey was through a continental qualifier. SAFA was in the same position in 2015. SAFA was allowed to participate because FIFA was obviously strong enough, and FIFA said, no, there's no other qualification route. There's only a continental one. In 2011, we were in the same position. We did not have that courtesy. We've raised these issues with that book. We didn't have that courtesy in 2011. We had to rescind our position and give it up to Argentina and Spain. We then had to wait in line to see if by the draw of the stick, we would then be the next highest-ranked non-qualified team and get the additional opportunity to go to an additional qualifying tournament. We spent an excess 2.5 million rand to get the teams to India to an additional qualifier and to get the men to Japan to an additional qualifying tournament. Both teams qualified. So in London 2012, we were in the same boat, but we had to go the additional route. We had to actually rescind the qualification route that we had achieved by our International Hockey Federation. So I take the comments from the committee. Thank you for embracing us in South African hockey. We will give you our guarantee that when we go back to the drawing board and discussing the qualification criteria for the next round, that we will be a lot more aggressive as just general members within the council. It's also there that we believe that the discussion around qualification takes place too early after the Olympic Games, when everyone still has the euphoria. Now we've got the euphoria of 10 medals in 2016. We'll be at the next meeting discussing qualification criteria for 2020. And people say, yes, we were right. Continental qualifiers are not good enough. But we have been in a position to say, actually, maybe we were not right, because a lot of athletes lost out an opportunity. Whether the strategy around only medal contenders is sufficient, that's another debate we have, because not every single athlete is going to medal contender. In the hockey competition, there are 12 teams. If the strategy was the same globally, there would only be 3 teams at Olympic Games, and that cannot be the strategy. It really cannot be the strategy. So we have a lot of work ahead of us, and I think there's a commitment from myself, there's a commitment from my executive to continue fighting to make sure that our players are represented at the highest level. Thank you.
Members, honourable members, you know,
I've got pressure because other members want to attend the memorial of our member who passed on. So, and then I can't not recognize the members that want to contribute because I saw your hand there, Honorable Malachi. I'm just saying we are under tremendous pressure because I don't want to find myself able to chair this meeting while other members are leaving, and they requested me to release them.
I told Taylor that it's something I would never do, you know, in a normal meeting. But I mean, because this is a key stage, and I think it was a point misunderstood in response to understand, because the initial comments with regards to the meeting was that they were improperly constituted, and that's why in my question I used irregular, because there was a reference based on the language that was used, so that the meeting were improperly constituted, you know, and then it becomes a romantic thing. But that's why I wanted absolute clarity on it, because, you know, it's one thing for something to be regular spending, but it is the principle of properly constituted meetings that are the improperly constituted meetings, so that they do the right business for the Federation. So that's why I raised my hand halfway through your response, because that response misunderstood the basis of my question.
Okay. So I hope we have given you some kind of comfort in terms of our presence, our comments. Because, I mean, if you can discuss this week, I think after 3 years will be a different entity altogether. There will even be more time for you to come and say key things like this. So for now, I mean, the department has made you communicate you. But from our side, I mean, we are not going to compromise on you meeting the target. The question that we are asking, we can't go to the ground. Because that is our priority. Once you don't turn it around, it means you are not doing our work. When there are other pressures, of not a good time to can lead with a Federation flag affair, and then that can allow that. I mean, 2.5 years we are being working, and then we are left with 2.5 years. We haven't met other, only we haven't met them. So we've got a lot of work to do. Okay. We must really thank you. I hope members agree that we must thank the leadership of OT for having come
and having presented their plans and how they are going to utilize the 10 euro from the department as the Federation of the Year, because that is what we do with other federations. So we hope it will make a difference, you know, going forward. And then we hope you pursue this thing of qualification. We don't want to you not to do it. We must engage correct for us. And if, as well, because when we meet SASCOP, we'll ask them. But so long you can exhaust all of those things so that we don't open up a situation whereby people can come here without exhausting what they are supposed to do, because they are key players in terms of being members of SASCOP. Remember, Fijifan, that we thank you very much. That we have to just deal with the business and decide as to how do we go forward. Thank you very much. Members, no. I was just thinking the delegation. What is our view, members? Because there is this memorial service, and then there is, I'm worried about the committee program. And then the deliberation on committee report on the performance of the department. What do we think? How can we deal with this? speak through the mic.
I suggest that we close this meeting and we'll continue with the other program next week, because now we have to attend, this is our fellow member. We must attend it at the monastery.
Let me just say what they did say to me, because they, you remember the officials here, they are the ones that deal with our problem, and they know the timelines. They are saying if we don't put a decision on our progress, including oversight, it means they might not have time to make an application. You got me, no? Because you see that item four is about what we want to see happening up to the end of this term. And then the timelines are such that we need to deal with that so that and can we agree to just deal with that and forego the minutes and the other two, and then maybe are you speaking on the memorial, Steph? Why don't we just deal with it quickly and then ensure that by 5:30 we are through? Am I representing you members that we deal with the four only? They take us through the four so that we can make a decision, although making a decision with the chair not here. I don't know. Let's deal with it and then. Mutaka?
Thanks, sir. I think that's the last time. Let's deal with number four.
Okay.
Then we, you know, we finish our ways.
All right. So who is going to take us through? Okay. Take us through.
Thank you very much, members. Without just any waste of time around the program. For this term in particular, which is the focus, last week on Thursday, the parliamentary program changed. So it necessitates some decisions from members. By the way, the
members, do you have that program?
No.
You didn't make
copies. Okay, I'll quickly run through it. It's not a difficult one.
How many copies do you have? I can charge you. Okay, I'll put it on the screen. Now you are taking more time. Sorry, there are 2 weeks. Can you...
Yeah. What is basically happening?
No, listen.
Is this the one, eh? Finger. How about this? Hold my chair. And then you say, if I back, and then you knock it back, if I'm
playing. What we basically done is that this month in particular, August, which is the time that members will attend, we're supposed to have 3 meetings last week, but last week's meeting is postponed as a proposal to members to the last week of this term, which will be on the 20th of September. The focus primarily on this in this term is one, try to get as many federations as possible before the budget vote. But secondly, still continue the oversight for the department for each stage of the department of the budget. But also engage Chapter 9 institutions like your Auditor General in this instance in preparation for the BRRR. So you'll see that next week we have proposed that SAFA, as a result of a meeting that was postponed last week, it must come this week. This meeting was, they were informed about it long time ago. So we had to receive that confirmation from them as yet. But we are hoping that we'll get confirmation and they'll be here next Tuesday. Then would follow the university sport. This was a meeting that we also postponed in May last time, so we have tried to include it there. But also we had proposed, in, if you recall the last time, that university sport must come with the transplant association on the same day. But we've not put it here because I know members had reservations about having two bodies at the same time. So that means the decision of members to say, can we include a transplant on the 5th of September with the transplant. And the sorry, this is an old problem. No, I'm supposed to have SRD on the 6th of September. Yeah. So remember, on the 6th of September, it's supposed to be SRSA, not university sport, sorry. It's supposed to be SRSA, in the following week, boxing South Africa. So the joint meeting that you see there on the 6th is supposed to take place on the 6th of September, the one of the FHM, supposed to be the meeting of the 16th of on the 6th of September. On the 13th, it's supposed to be boxing South Africa. That's just... So as a result of that, the week of the 18th of September has also been assigned as override week. Usually you'll have this override week on the last week of the term, which will be the week of the 20th. But this time around, last week Thursday, that program was changed. We'll show you the proposed override program that we had in mind. As a result of that, you'd have about 3 days of oversight. On the 13th of September is the meeting in the morning. In the afternoon is the plenary where the president is going to respond to questions. So there is no way that you get a permission to have oversight starting Monday and Tuesday because of that session. So our oversight then starts on a Wednesday, which is the 14th. The 15th runs until the 16th. We have 3 days for oversight, which will be the week of the 13th. And then the following week is just committee week. So what we have proposed is that the joint meeting that we had, that was supposed to be held last week, be on the 20th. But we also have those other number of days post the 20th to have meetings because there will not be any plenaries or any sessions. There are plenaries in the afternoon that week. So the decision that we need to take is to adopt this program that indicates on the 6th is a meeting with SRSA and DBE to talk about first the first quarterly report of 2016-2017, but also to look at the joint programs of schools for them to see what was progress has been made. And the second one being on the 20th, on the 13th, the boxing South Africa to look at the turnaround strategy around the plans that they have put there. So that was the program that we have for you. But also we have put and a decision that needs to be made is on the oversight. From the last oversight that was postponed, it was supposed to have taken place last year in November, where members had indicated that we must go to Free State and Northwest. That plan was the one that we went to implement. But this time we have said, because of the experiences that we've seen when we went to KZN and so on, to go to one province seems to be give members enough focal point to see if we look at the project one province in particular. So it proposed Free State, and we have put up a program for oversight, which will focus on the same areas that we've been focusing at, the usage of the MIG, the use of the DORA grants, the focus on the sport-focused schools and the school sports program, and academic systems in the province, in the provinces. That has been the program that we've been looking at. So usually you'll see that other programs also spill over. That's my proposal. Looking at the fact that on the 13th, at the end of the day, we'll finish at 5, most probably, after presidential response. And the following day probably will have to be the traveling day. So you know you have 2 days to work in the province. So the question that we wanted to put is that feasible? Alternatively, we had proposed on the very same day of the 14th, 15th and 16th a form of public hearing. Okay, I don't know, I don't see those papers, I don't think they were printed. A form of public hearing. We should focus on three things. We will invite the members from the public to make input, one, on the budget process, on the budget of the department. But secondly, to talk and comment about the school board program in particular, and the other matter that we have put upfront there is on the unboxing. So what the lineup that we have proposed, that on Wednesday the 14th, if members agree, as part of the public hearing, we'll, instead of going out to Free State as is the case, to have public hearings where we invite public that is interested and members to make submissions on one, comment on the budget and priorities of the department program, and what are the members, the general public wishes on the departmental budget. The second day focuses on public hearings around boxing in South Africa, so that we also receive submissions that members, perhaps through the deliberations of the BTLA, can also use in as far as budgeting concerned around boxing. The third day, as part of the public hearings, have public hearings around the school sport program in particular, and invite public to make submissions to that. So those are two proposals that we have for the oversight week, to go out to the state on identified areas and we can modify the program, or to be in Cape Town and have public hearings around that. So those are the proposals that we had invited members to make input of. The other issue, which is the last one, would have been to look and adopt the first quarterly report. Remember, I had deliberated on it previously. The fourth quarterly report that was held when we met in the last meeting, it was deliberated upon. So we have drafted the report that members have to consider for adoption. Thank you. So just to recall, the oversight will be for 3 days, so there's no other provision for extended time. Considering that your traveling will only happen on a Wednesday, on the 14th, then you have 15th and 16th for your engagement. If that will be effective, it's up to the members to get. That's the parliamentary program that you see. Thank you.
I think I would like to support that we do this, okay? What is the possibility of us, is there any flight that we can fly in that, and then we have 3 days? You know, the wing that the Tuesday evening, aren't we fly Tuesday evening?
Because we'll all be here.
Yeah.
And after that meeting, we simply started. We go straight and then we do Free State only. But then you see Free State, there are interest issues, there is that thing, water. So we might get to keep it open, we might have a Yeah, so we just design a program of keeping that we want to see there, go to state.
I'm not following. Is that week parliamentary week, or are we using the fact that the committee is on issue day, then that rest of the week becomes open for us? I'm not clear.
The program was changed to have that week as an oversight week, committee oversight week. So you can either have a meeting throughout the week from Wednesday until Friday, or you can go on oversight because there are no plenaries there for the remainder of the week.
Okay. So, members, we agreed, I think it we agreed. And then the report, because it's for adoption, why don't we do it next week? Because so that we can go in at the airport for me.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm going to go.